Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
See if you know the answers to these questions. How many servings of fruits, vegetables, grains, and proteins should we consume in a day? What foods will keep us healthy and fit? The Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, which is a group of nutrition experts appointed by the federal government, has a series of recommendations to help answer questions like those.
The committee is working on revisions to these guidelines due out next year. And for the first time, it's considering the environmental implications of your food choices. For example, beef might be a good source of protein, but raising cows leaves a much bigger carbon footprint than, say, growing grains and vegetables.
All of which leads us to the politics of food. Tucked into the congressional spending bill passed last weekend was a directive that said that federal dietary guidelines should not take into account environmental concerns. The reason? Lawmakers say that members of the committee might be experts in nutrition, but they are not experts in climate science.
So we're going to talk now about the intersection of food, politics, and even climate change. And someone who's thought a lot about this is Michel Nashon. He's a two-time James Beard Award-winning chef and the president and CEO of Wholesome Wave, which is a nonprofit that aims to increase access to fresh, locally grown food. And he joins us now from Fairfield, Connecticut. And Michel, good to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
And listeners, we want you involved in this conversation. Do you think environmental considerations should be factored into dietary guidelines, or should the guideline committee stay out of it? Do you consider how your grocery store choices might impact the changing climate? Do you think at all about the politics of your food choices? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Michel, I'll start with this question. You favor the idea of the Dietary Committee including environmental concerns in their guidelines. Tell me why it's a good idea.
You know, it's interesting. It's something that I just recently learned about. But for some time, over 35 years, I've been in the food business, in some businesses of significant scale. And along that journey, as a chef who feeds, you know, many tens of thousands of people, two of my boys, he had five children, were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And I really learned about the connection of food not only to environmental health and to the health of farming culture and quality, which is what I was working on up until the time my son Chris was diagnosed 20 years ago. But that impact on human health really caused me to take a deep dive over the years. So I've spent a lot of time friends with a variety of folks in the field, nutritionists, public health professionals, and, you know, doctors and scientists and all that stuff. And I've really come to the conclusion that food as a single subject has more impact, whether it's environmental health, economic health, human health, community health. It has more impact on all of those things than any other single subject. So I think the more you know about your food, is any consumer who might be concerned about the environment, if they knew that their food choices would have an impact on that, I think they would factor that into their decision-making.
You know, I first met you at the Let's Talk About Food Festival in Boston. And when you were there this past summer, you made a pretty compelling case that politics and food are pretty inextricably linked, that they should be linked. And I think you said something like, solve the food problem and you solve a series of other problems as well. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, you know, I think what's interesting is when you look at, so for instance, you know, the current conventional agricultural system that allows us to have really inexpensive rice, really inexpensive snack chips, you know, and what I mean by rice is, you know, highly processed, polished rice that cooks in 5 to 20 minutes, cereals, all kinds of things. You know, the technology that allowed that type of shelf-stable processing were designed at a time when we actually didn't understand that it was actually simple carbohydrates that create obesity, not eating fat, for instance. You know, so when those sciences and the massive agricultural production systems that allowed us to produce so much food and make it shelf stable, I really do believe the intentions were we can feed the world. We can survive a World War III. We can make food in a way where if really bad things happen, people will still have affordable access to it. And the government, through policy, really shifted a lot of financial support in the direction of this type of not only agricultural production, but the actual processing and transportation of these inexpensive ingredients as well. So, you know, the intention was this type of food should be broadly distributed, easily accessible and inexpensive, which it is. But now we've learned that this is the type of food that's actually the some of the worst stuff we could be eating. You know, so policy kind of led us in this direction, not out of any malintent, but now that we know the truth about it, policy has to play a role in kind of unwinding that. I don't mind investing some taxpayer dollars into the food system, but if we're going to invest them, let's invest them in the types of foods and the type of food production that's going to favor human and environmental and economic health.
Sure. Michelle, one of the arguments, I want to get back to this idea, this debate about including environmental factors in federal food guidelines. And we're going to hear more about sort of the pushback to this in a moment. But one of the arguments against it is that people who study nutrition don't have the right expertise, don't have environmental expertise. What's your response to that argument?
Well, I guess my response is anybody who has a master in public health is a pretty smart person and has availability to a variety of other sciences. They know how to research. They know how to read studies. They know how to connect the dots. And just in my own, the last 20 years since Chris has been stricken with diabetes, I've met plenty of folks that are in the nutrition world who have been in other disciplines and understand all kinds of other forms of science. You know, so to me, it's to kind of dumb down if you're a nutritionist, you only know about food, is a little bit of a mistake. I think there are also plenty of consumers, like I don't consider myself a nutritionist, a scientist, I'm a chef, but I have had access to a lot of very high quality information over the last 20 years, and I've spent the time to study it, and I think my conclusions, my own personal conclusions of the impacts of food on environmental health are very solid. I don't need to be a climate scientist to understand what most climate scientists are saying, and that's that the current food system has more impact on global warming than perhaps any other single industry. So, you know, there are plenty of science out there that's been written by smart people that can be you know, easily understood by many, as long as they avail themselves of the information or it's made available to them. So I don't think you have to be an expert to be able to connect the dots.
Yeah, so if you were on this committee, for example, and you wanted to make food recommendations that reduce the negative impact on the planet, what would you recommend? I mean, consuming less meat, for example.
Well, you know, so to me, that's where more of the challenge is, because, you know, for instance, consuming less meat is the easiest one. You know, if we, you know, first of all, from a human health perspective, overconsumption of red meat isn't good for human health, let alone the environmental health. You know, if we just cut our and it does not just beef, if we cut our overall meat consumption in half, for instance, and replaced it with more plant-based protein, the human health and the environmental health impacts would be. There are plenty of science out there to prove on both sides of the coin that both the human and the environmental health benefits would be significant. When you get to other, my difficulty with it, because this is new to me and I look forward to studying it more, is when you look at, for instance, you know, choosing organic, certified organic food would be an easy way to say that you're choosing more environmentally friendly food, and that's true in some cases when you look at the reduction in petrochemical inputs, both in the form of fertilizers, pesticides, fungicides. But when you look at water usage, which is perhaps one of the greatest concerns, environmental concerns that's out there, large-scale organic spinach production, for instance, really isn't that much more water efficient than conventional spinach production. So whenever you're devoting 3,000 acres of land to any type of leafy green substance that's open to the conditions, the same erosion, the same water usage challenges are in all forms of agriculture. So it's a can of worms, but I think it's a beautiful can of worms, because I think we need to start having these conversations of de-siloing and just saying food is for food people, environment is for environmental people. You know, this is a human community, and our impact of as a human community.
Right. So it's all connected. Michelle Nashon, stand by, because I want to invite the listeners into this conversation. We're talking with Michelle Nashon. He's a chef and president and CEO of Wholesome Wave. Do you think environmental considerations should be factored into dietary guidelines? What do you think about the intersection of politics and your food choices? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And let me introduce Peter Ballersted. He's a forage agronomist with Healthy Nation Coalition, which is critical of the National Dietary Guidelines, and they're specifically critical of incorporating environmental factors into these guidelines. And Peter is joining us from Tangent, Oregon. Peter, good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, you've been listening to this conversation. What's your concern about the idea of incorporating environmental factors into food guidelines for the American public?
Well, I guess just to start with, what was the mission of the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee? I found Michelle's description, there's much there that I agree with. The point that I would get to is that we have the food supply we have today in no small measure because the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee has been producing these dietary guidelines since 1980. We've been told as a population that we should be eating diets lower in fat, higher in carbohydrates. Since that time, the best evidence is that the American public has been trying to make those dietary changes. As a result, we have products that meet those kinds of recommendations. And concurrent with those recommendations, we see this explosion in obesity and diabetes and other chronic illnesses. So it's arguable, at least, that there's some kind of linkage there.
So wait a minute, but I mean, couldn't someone push back and say, does that mean that the dietary guidelines are wrong or that folks aren't following the dietary guidelines?
Well, as I said, the best evidence is that we have changed our eating patterns to in the direction that we've been told would be healthy. So I guess I'd push back a little bit against the idea that we're just not listening.
What about revising dietary guidelines that would incorporate environmental considerations? I mean, is that something that would improve or enhance a set of environmental guidelines? I mean, dietary guidelines.
Well, I think that the evidence is that we're not being given a thorough discussion of all the relevant science to formulate nutritional advice. So that's one thing. How branching off into another subject is going to improve the nutritional advice is a very difficult thing for me to understand how that's going to happen. We absolutely should learn more about food. We should have a bigger discussion about where food comes from and all of its impacts. But no decision is absent impacts. That law of unintended consequences still reigns supreme. And when you, for example, remove fat from the diet, it gets replaced with something else, carbohydrates. And when those recommendations were initially made, there were a number of people who urged caution, and that was ignored because people were convinced that they knew what was right.
I also heard
Michelle make that comment about more greenhouse gas emissions from livestock production than from any other industry, and that's a commonly stated data point. However, when you go and you look at where that comes from, it's a very problematic data point. Basically, you're looking at...
Peter, I'm just going to jump in here because I don't want to get too lost down this particular rabbit hole. I do understand that you take issue with that point about livestock, and I just want to give Michelle a chance to respond. I also want to get a listener involved into this conversation. So let me go to Kevin, who's calling from Wrentham, Massachusetts. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. So I agree with, you know, using dietary habits to help, you know, promote the environment for wellness. But I think using the, you know, national guidelines for dietary habits is misguided and complicates it and may even undermine it because it politicizes it. People may look at those guidelines and think like, oh, that's political mumbo jumbo. I'm not, you know, it's misguided now. They may not want to apply it to their habits anymore.
Interesting. Okay, so support for environmental concerns in dietary guidelines, but take it out of the sort of federal dietary guidelines.
Just promote it separately.
Yeah, interesting. Michelle Nishan, what do you think about that, what Kevin's suggesting?
I think Kevin's suggestion is interesting, and it's crossed my mind when I learned that this was that this movement was afoot. And I don't disagree with them. The interesting thing about it, though, is that I think the conversation has to be started somewhere, and it does need to happen in a political framework, as well as you know, having the right information available to the broader public around just overall better science around food choices. Period. But the conversation definitely has to happen somewhere. So it's not uncommon to see, you know, something taken up in one arena, and the conversation moves to another.
Sure.
when it actually becomes actionable.
Yeah, Peter, I'm going to give the last word to you. We literally have 15 seconds left, but I'd love you to respond to our Kevin's call as well. I mean, would that solve some of your concerns? You know, somehow promote this conversation, but outside the context of these federal guidelines.
I am all in favor of everyone being concerned about the environment in which they live. I'm very concerned about somebody enacting policy about a subject that's ill-defined, if defined at all. And it's a body that has a questionable track record of achieving its original stated goal.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there for now. Really interesting conversation that I feel like we just got off the ground. We'll come back to it. Peter Ballerstead, a forage agronomist with the Healthy Nation Coalition, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And Chef Michelle Nishan, he's a James Beard Award-winning chef and president and CEO of Wholesome Wave. Michelle, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you all.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, the man credited with ushering in the singer-songwriter era. Local folk icon Tom Rush is with us live in the studio. I'm Anthony Brooks with Lisa Mullins. This is Radio Boston.